So I reiterate here, the bill is dead.
The story of this great city is about the years before this night.
We are free!
Hey everyone, this is Ho Ho Hong Kong with me, your host Vivek Mabubani. That's right, I said host, not co-host, because today actually Mohammed has decided to stay. I believe he's still in Australia, being with his little lovey-lovey Annie Louie. He's like, you know, Annie, I want to spend more time with you. Oh, responsibilities, I don't know what those are. I'll just, you know, stay with you. It's okay. Vivek, who cares? He has to be alone on the podcast. I mean, whatever. You know, he's only the other guy with all the technical stuff, and my job was simply to be a co-host, but I couldn't even do that because, Annie, love you, love you. But don't worry, Mohammed decided to be responsible for a change and got me a co-host today. He is the OG of OGs of the comedy scene in Hong Kong. Anyone who's been in the comedy scene will definitely have come across him. And please welcome Chris Musney.
Hey, what's up? Thanks for having me, Vivek.
Yes. So basically, Chris Musney, for anybody who doesn't know, he has seen comedy with the full evolution of the beginning when we were in the basement at Take Out Comedy, all the way to the scene changing, the times when it was split with comedy.hk, all those things. He's been through it, and you will still catch him every now and then at different shows, especially open mic nights. You'll definitely see him coming on stage trying out different material. So Chris, you and myself have been doing comedy for... Oh, wow. I don't know, like 13, 14?
Like something like that.
Something like that, yeah. Right? It's been a long time.
I don't even want to say anymore.
Right? It's like over a decade. Like, man, yeah. I've been doing this. This is weird.
I don't want to say because people are like, how come you're not funny? After 10 plus?
Exactly. At this point.
That last set I saw seemed more like 10 weeks.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then you kind of go like, well, don't worry. Comedy doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
It's not one of those, like, the more time I do, the immediately my next joke has got to be better. Exactly. So you have that issue. But the good thing is that you have seen the evolution of comedy in Hong Kong / Asia, with you also have done gigs outside of Hong Kong as well, yeah?
Right, yeah.
So could you just tell us a bit more about your story of comedy, why you began, just real quickly, and a little bit about yourself? Because the beginning of a comedy, people always know you as the guy who's talking about the dad and the mother, how they met and all that stuff. Could you give our listeners just a little bit introduction about that?
Basically, I've always wanted to do stand-up when I was like a teen.
Yeah.
I didn't know what stand-up was before, and then I got Seinfeld was on,
same,
but I never watched the show.
Oh,
I actually thought he looked like a dork. And he doesn't look funny. He looks like a normal, he looks like a guy who's like a tax guy or
you
something.
You would expect a comedian to have a certain look, a certain style, and he's just like,
exactly,
this guy off the street, like, you're the performer.
Exactly. So I kind of got towards the end of high school, and I got Seinfeld. When he finished his show, or near the round the time he finished his show, he did a special called I'm Telling You for the Last Time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I watched that whole thing end to end. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. I couldn't believe someone could be that funny. I like memorized like the whole thing.
Yeah.
It still has some like classic bits.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I have to do stand-up. And then I waited for like 10 years.
Yeah.
And then I always delay for some reason. And then I moved out to Hong Kong and kind of started it here.
Yeah. I mean, the same for me as well. Seinfeld was my only exposure to stand-up comedy because back then, I mean, TV had no other channels. So it was only the two English channels here. And Seinfeld was one of the sitcoms when I was like, what's this guy doing talking in the beginning before he does the actual show?
Yeah.
And then I was confused because, like, I mean, my teachers do the same thing at school. Yet I don't want to listen to them. But this guy, I don't know why, about shampoo, he's interesting to me, you know? Like, talk my hair on the wall of the bathroom, why he doesn't stay in his friend's places when he travels. I was like, how did he just turn a hair on a wall into something I care about?
And, oh, yeah.
You know, that itself was just like, oh, this is good. I like this thing, you know. And it was just so simple. There's no, like, I've got to look a certain way. I've got to dance a certain thing. I've got to, you know, sing a certain way. It's like, no, just talk.
You know what's crazy is that I'm glad. It's just luck that you happen to find the guy that you stick with.
Yeah.
And the more I learn about comedy, and I still think he's like, top of his game, not just in monetary success.
Oh yeah,
but his approach to stand up is like so laser perfect, and I'm just happy because like you could pick the wrong guy, like you could have picked Bill Cosby.
That's the first
special you watched.
Like, so I gotta touch people after the show. Okay, yeah. I'll try that.
Yeah, but like I picked Seinfeld, and he's still like my number one guy. There's other guys I really really like. But yeah, he's like still top.
Yeah,
now he's making movies.
Oh, he did Unfrosted, dude. I just watched it on the plane coming back here. is pretty good. It's so Seinfeld. It's okay, put it this way. If you're not a Seinfeld fan, you're like, this is stupid. What am I watching? A comic book? What is this, right? Yeah. But it's so him where it's like over the top cartoony and it's like the acting is clearly like exaggerated, the colors are saturated, and it's just talking about breakfast cereal, dude.
Yeah.
Like a whole movie about the Pop-Tart. I'm like that. And Jim Gaffigan being like the Kellogg's boss, I'm like that. So come on, Pop-Tart, Jim Gaffigan, really? This is fantastic.
That lineup is great.
Right? Exactly. And it was like all comics, man.
Yeah.
It was insane. So anybody, if you're into comedy, go watch Unfrosted on Netflix. It just came out, I think, a couple of days ago in Hong Kong, at least. And the actors they have on, all comedians. I mean, John F. Kennedy was played by Bill Burr.
Yeah.
That was so good. I'm like, this is really good. Because I was like, I recognize all these guys. What the hell?
And it's nuts.
And I love seeing how comedians are happy to bring comedians on, even if they know, like, you're not maybe the best person for this role. But you're like, no, I want a comedian.
Yeah, and you know why?
Why?
They're real people.
They're real people, exactly.
They're kind of messed up people too.
But they're real in that sense.
Not like actors, right?
Yeah.
I think you got to be fake and lucky a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Good looks and everything. They did have Hugh Grant in as the Tiger, Tony the Tiger. Yeah.
He's also funny.
He's good.
I think funny people are a little
quirky in that sense.
I think they're a little more down to earth. If you can make fun of yourself, I think it really helps.
Yeah, because you have to get to terms with it. You have to accept it to a point you're like, I'm okay with being flawed.
And why would you have to be funny if you're attractive?
Exactly. And you probably didn't have bad
stuff. No offense.
Stuff.
I'm not saying you're not attractive.
Oh, no, don't worry, man. Like, I've looked in the mirror. Don't worry, man, Chris. Like, we both have the super bag eye bags. Yeah, we're good, dude. Yeah, we're going to be funny for the rest of our lives with that.
Yeah, people always ask me if I get enough sleep. I'm like, this is me and my life.
Yeah,
okay?
Exactly.
That's how I am.
Yeah, this question is not something I've asked myself. So trust me. I don't need to answer that. But okay, so the thing that I've realized that comedians talking about with comedians, we always end up talking about comedians as well.
Yeah.
Right? And I think the fascination of over time doing comedy, you growing as a comedian as well, your admiration for different comedians also changes. For example, I grew up Seinfeld. That was my guy. Then it was Bill Burr and Chris Rock. Those two were big influences because like they were the ones. Then Russell Peters came in and I saw a special going like, oh, that's one of us. Hey, I could do that.
Yeah.
And now it is a lot like big influences, Trevor Noah and Kevin Hart. Now, I know these are all big names, obviously. Like there are many like smaller
names. They're very different.
They're very different, you know. However, the one thing I love about comedians that I admire is that I always want to read their biographies. So if they have a biography, I've read it. Like Seinfeld's got his book. He doesn't have a biography, but a lot of interviews and everything. So I've read a lot of those. Kevin Hart has a book, like I Can't Make This Shit Up. Trevor Noah has a book, Born a Crime. What about you? How do you admire comedians that you like in general, other than watching their specials and the comedy sets? Is there anything else you do?
I try to watch every video that they're in. So a ton of, if it's like a 20 second interview or if it's a podcast, I just watch those religiously. That's like my religion. And the funny thing is the more you watch it and all these different guys, they're so similar. They have different interests. They have different hobbies, but like the way they're down to earth and sort of they're trying to shed all the BS of the world, they're so similar in that regard.
Yeah. And that's the thing because comedy, it makes you look at things from so many angles. You can't bullshit because like they're going to see right through this. They're going to know this bullshit. I mean, let's be honest. A lot of the comedy that we do comes from a real place. Obviously, we exaggerate, add a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But highly likely, it's an observation that we thought there's a problem here. I can't understand the world. And here's my take on it. But it's not like, oh, you're wrong and I'm right. It's more like, well, why is this right? You know?
And they ask that because they can't let go of it.
Yeah.
It's normal people are like, just let it go.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm like, I can't.
Yeah. It bothers me, man. And I think that's
not in a good way.
Yeah, I'm angry.
I'm really angry.
We're not ignoring it, you know. No. We're like, yeah, this is an issue. I'm going to deal with this, right?
Yeah, one of my favorite is Bill Burr talking about Brian Regan. By the way, when they talk about each other, I'm like in
that's
heaven.
That's the best.
It's the best. And he's like, talking about Brian Regan, and he's like, you know, people, they obviously he's amazing, but people act like, oh, he's so silly on stage. But I bet you he wasn't feeling like that when that thing happened in real life.
Yeah.
He was furious.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
I know he was.
It's always comedy equals a tragedy plus time. It's always like at the moment, like this is the worst thing ever. But hey, look, I got a coping mechanism comes
That's
in.
Right. That's
yeah.
Right.
Now the thing I'm very curious is that we can see the two of us growing in comedy in different ways. I just came back from Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, you're succeeding.
Hey, let's not put it that way. You know, I'm flourishing. Yeah, no.
That's the same thing.
No, succeeding implies that you have, like, I am making ends meet and this and that on a high level where it's like, oh, this is it, we're done. I mean.
I meant more than that.
Yeah.
I didn't mean, like, you're hungry.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm not that hungry. Yeah. Maybe later I will be, but we'll see. No, but I'll put it this way, that the one thing I think we can talk about is the original Hong Kong comedy scene, the original, when it was like us trying to do a 7-minute set, going like, hey, man, I have one more minute. I can do 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. I think I can do 8 minutes, you know. I remember like trying to hit that 10-minute mark and go like, I don't know, man, this bit's pretty shit, but I'm going to squeeze it in just to hit that 10-minute mark and try. When you first started off, how annoying was it when you initially told people you're a comedian and their reaction was like, no, wait, what?
I honestly don't like that. So I even now I don't tell people.
Oh, really?
And not only that, I say I do stand up.
Oh, so they have to like put
I don't
two
I
together,
never refer
yeah.
to myself as a comedian because I always feel like that's what you do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
fair.
Saying?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I feel like there's a difference.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? However, if you do a set and you crush and to them
yeah,
you might as well be.
Yeah.
That's fine. But let the performance
speak
do
for
that
itself.
Instead of like, hey, I just did open mic for the first time this week, and on my bio on IG, I'm a comedian now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, but you bombed.
Yeah.
No one thought you were a comedian.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know if you didn't mention it.
Yeah, your 17 followers may not buy it, but everybody else who was there, the 20 people who were actually in the room.
Yeah, I thought comedians are funny. Don't you have to at least be funny?
Yeah, exactly.
And not only that, like, I don't think I'm hard on myself, but you have to have there's a difference, right?
Yeah.
You can't just be funny. Like, comedians are amazing. When I first saw Bill Burr live, I it's like,
dude,
I was on drugs.
Was your first Bill Burr live in Hong Kong?
Yeah.
Dude, it was the Cyberport one, right?
Yes.
Oh, man, that one.
What do you think?
Oh, my God. Like, when I was there, I was just in heaven, dude.
You'll never forget that. It's one of the best laughs in your life, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
it's phenomenal.
Like, sitting, especially I remember the stage right basically around where Bill Burr was looking, I was at the 2 o'clock mark, second row from the front.
Okay.
And I was like the moment I saw that art, the post that his show was coming, immediately, no question, bought 3 tickets. Straight up. I'm
same
like,
here.
Becoming.
I never buy tickets.
Oh, yeah,
for anything,
exactly. I was like, maybe I'll get a comedy. I might be able to connect with people. I was like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You take my money. This one, you're getting it. You know.
It's Bill Burr.
Oh, it's Bill Burr. Exactly.
It's like Jesus's comeback. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Like, this is the best.
I believe in this.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
So I think so we can see that clearly. Our comedy initial interests very similar. Jerry Seinfeld, Bill Burr. What about you? Like, what about now? Who are your go-to people that you like to watch?
My guy now has got to be Nate Bargatze.
Oh,
Nate Bargatze for sure.
Okay, what about him? Is the thing that gets you? Is it personality? Is it the writing quality?
Dude, the way his writing. Obviously, his performance is amazing.
Yeah.
But like, I think we tend to look past that a little bit.
Yeah, we get it. Yeah,
sometimes. Because sometimes you could have a great shtick and the jokes aren't there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But his performance is amazing. But the way he manipulates the tension in a situation.
Yeah.
He doesn't use foul language. He doesn't even have controversial topics.
Yeah.
And he's able to really milk all of the tension.
Yeah.
Into a situation. And I just find it unbelievable. His whole bit, his closing bit on Starbucks.
Yeah.
Stuff.
I haven't seen that one, the Starbucks one.
Dude,
yeah,
that's like my favorite special of his.
Oh, man.
The Greatest Average American on Netflix.
Yeah.
And it is phenomenal.
Okay.
He closes on a bit about Starbucks. And I don't think many people would do that.
Yeah, you wouldn't.
He's talking about being embarrassed.
Yeah.
That's it.
Drinking Starbucks, like, oh, God, what have I done with my life?
Yeah. It's not some big story where it's like, yeah, we went to Vegas and, you know, we got some hookers. It's like just he went to go to Starbucks and that's his closer.
Yeah.
How funny it has to be to be his closer.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Oh, man. Okay. I'll definitely check that out online later on tonight because I'm half awake anyway today after
there
flying red eye.
There you go.
I came down from Perth this time. So, this is the thing. I've noticed that different comedians from different regions, obviously different sense of humor. Me being in Australia is kind of, it's okay. So I did my Cantonese show this time, my Cantonese tour and everything. And on the last night at Perth, I could do a best of fest 5-minute spot, right? And I've done that also like in Edinburgh when I was there last year. And it was 5-minute spot, 10-minute spot, whatever, just in front of an audience. Just wanted to try it out.
Mm.
And so far I have found I can perform to English speaking, white people slash whatever in Hong Kong or in Asia. The moment I leave Asia, my English comedy falls completely flat to white ears. Completely. Like to the point where it's a golf clap at best. like, I will give you an example. My last show was in Perth, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm in this room called the Rechabit, okay? Mm-hmm. Rechabit or whatever it's called, right? Rechabit. And it's a 300-seater, super awesome, grungy, heavy metal kind of room. And I was, like, doing my Cantonese show. It was sold, like, almost 300 people all sold out and everything. I'm like, yeah, it's a great room, right? That's a 6:30 show, okay? And then at 9:30, I have the English showcase show. Okay, so this is, as you can see over here.
Oh, wow.
Right? It's right over there. You have like three layers of people.
Yeah.
You have the ground floor and then the sides inside. So it's literally like a, you can see it's clearly is like a nightclub kind of feel. Mm-hmm. All right. So the Cantonese show, really good. Last show of my run, I have my stuff solid. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm like, this is on autopilot. I'm just enjoying the feel right now. I know exactly what I'm going to say next. Dun, dun, dun. Great, great, great. People clapping. I've been good. Okay. 9:30 is the English show, right? I go out there and they have like people like Dan Rath, really good guy in Australia. Luke Heggie, also a veteran over there. Mm-hmm. And I'm after Luke Heggie, right? So Luke Heggie's up there doing his stuff. People laughing. Blah, blah, blah. And I go up there because like right now I've noticed a few things. I've tried saying my joke about my name, like my name is Vivek. People call me Wick Wick, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't fall well because they're like, V-I-V-E-K is not that difficult. Mm-hmm. They cannot believe people can't say that. Like, you're lying.
Well, let me help you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're like, how would you get that wrong? That's an easy name. I mean, yeah. I could say it. And remember, this is an audience that probably has never been to Asia.
Yeah.
So they cannot believe the absurdity that we have in Hong Kong / Asia. We're like, yeah, this actually happens, buddy. Like, you have no idea how people are swerving between gaps trying to get on the train and stuff. You have no clue,
it's
people.
It's nuts.
Nuts, right? Yeah. You have no clue. Yeah. All right. So now my go-to thing is I go on stage and, hey, from Hong Kong, Vivek, right? I go on stage and I always like to, I try to open with, like, oh, I know what you're thinking. I look in my face, like, Hong Kong. Hong Kong's in the Middle East, right? Yeah. I would do that, right?
Yeah.
And so far in Edinburgh and Perth as well, people are like, like, wait, you're not making the connection? Like,
yeah.
Hong Kong Chinese, this face not so Chinese, no?
Right.
And I'm still trying to understand, are they not making the connection because I'm not Middle Eastern enough? Mm-hmm. As in they see enough Middle Eastern, we're like, yeah, you're not that Middle Eastern to us. Mm-hmm. Or is it like, ooh, Middle East, oh, we don't want to, let's not go there. Because whenever I go to these places, being the Asian comedian, you either fit into the Asian picture that they think you should be.
Yeah.
You're Indian, you must be this.
Yeah.
And if you don't, they're like, I cannot laugh because I feel bad now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're also holding multiple concepts. Like, you might say it, but they're still thinking, but how can that
be? Oh, yeah. They're analyzing.
So hard.
Yeah, you know, they're overanalyzing. I'm like, well, no, that's what Hong Kong people do. Like, we're here, like, that's not funny. I'm like, what's going on? So that's the one bizarre thing I've always experienced whenever I travel, where I'm like, I'm going to do an English set, and I know it's not going to go well, but I'm like, let's do this, man.
But it's a short set.
It's a 5-minute set. No big deal.
So you get a pass.
I get a pass. Yeah, exactly. And look, honestly, this one is for me just to get a feel for it, because I know this is not my crowd. I can already tell you. It's like a
my thing too is that it's 5 minutes.
Yeah.
There's no way. You know what I mean?
There's
it's totally a new situation. They know nothing about your situation. Yeah. It's all so hard.
It's so again, like I said, but the thing for me nowadays with my evolution of comedy is that I want to be put in those situations. Like, doing a set in Hong Kong for me now is like, you know, it's like no big deal.
Yeah.
I'll do a good job. I'll do my best and everything, but I'm not gonna be like, I wanna do a set in this room because I wanna try that. Like, I'm pretty sure I've got this down.
Right.
Whereas overseas, I'm still like, I can tell you, I was nervous that night before going on stage. Mm-hmm. I'm like, man, I remember Edinburgh. That was terrible, man. Yeah. That was awkward. Okay, let's just do this. Whatever it is, what it is, right? I go up there, do the Middle East, and like, there's like a, that's it. And I'm like, we're back here now. Let's do this now. So I would try a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I would get like, I even try to think about Australia that I've done in Cantonese, loved it and everything. It's basically about this idea that I'm on taking the free tram in Melbourne, and I'm holding the handrail. Okay, so it's a vertical handrail pole. My hand's in the middle. This couple comes on. They're in love. They're looking at each other. Don't look at anybody else. And the boyfriend's hand's above my hand, girlfriend's hand's above below my hand, and I'm in between, right? Nobody's looking at whose hand is who, and the boyfriend's stroking my hand, thinking it's the girlfriend's hand, right? All that kind of stuff. And I'm it's funny, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, can't you feel my hair? I'm like, you know, maybe they started going out. Today's the first day they're holding hands. He has no idea how hairy she really is.
Yeah.
Right? These kinds of things, right? It killed it. I tried it in Hong Kong before, this idea. I'm like, really good. Australia's been killing strong.
Uh-huh.
Here, they're kind of like, why didn't you, like, I can see in their eyes going like, you should have said, excuse me. You should have done something. Like, why would you let that happen? And I'm like, because it's awkward. Like, why would I have to say, excuse me? Right.
Right.
And I realized, I mean, it's true. Cause like over there, people don't have the same that we have over here where it's like, I don't want to say anything. This is so weird. Why should I have to say it? You should know better.
Yeah.
We're passive in that sense. Where over there, like, excuse me, that's my hand. I'm like, that's another thing I never realized, where they will actively tell you, buddy, that's my hand. Get your hand off of me.
Like, in Australia, whoa. They'll say that.
They'll do that. I mean, or they'll say it nicer, like, oh, that's not your girlfriend's hand. That's mine.
Right.
You know, the typical British kind of like passive aggressive, like, ah, oh, you know, I'm okay with you, but just letting you know, maybe you love me more. I don't know, right?
Right.
You know, and that's the thing. I was like, oh, I still have to get a grasp of that, where they are okay with saying out what we here in Hong Kong are thinking. Mm-hmm. Here, we're passive aggressive. We just won't say it. There, they're passive aggressive. They'll say it.
Yeah, we like to pretend like we're polite, but we're totally
exactly. Yeah, you know,
not at all.
Yeah, so I think that's what I'm still trying to get. So that's my challenge now for me as a comedian, the trying to get past that kind of mentality where it's not like, oh, the world is in Asia, the world is this.
Well, that's what wasn't that the whole thing about taking the act on the road? Because like you can never really know. Until like there have you we've all heard about guys, oh yeah, this guy kills in this town,
oh, and dies over there, absolutely,
he can't
man.
Go to another town, and he has killer bits about that one mall that has that weird parking lot or whatever, but how are you going to tell that in another city?
Exactly.
And there was that I'm sure you know the Louis C.K. story about when he was a New York comic and staying in New York, and Chris Rock was below them, and then he started touring,
and he got much better,
and then
better,
he came
right?
back. And he said he came back after touring and they're all at Caroline's.
And
he destroyed in a way he couldn't believe. And he said all of the comics sat in the back like we were the losing team on the World Series. This guy, we're all just like, we're New York comics.
Yeah.
And then this guy's on the road coming back and like, this is how it's done.
Yeah.
And who's Chris Rock now? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, oh, absolutely, man.
That's who he is.
Yeah. I think that's the thing, though. So that's what happened to me in 2015 when I went to Australia first time. I came back. I'm like, oh. And I'm a firm believer of Kobe Bryant's saying of while they're playing checkers, I'm playing chess.
Yeah.
That was 2015.
I'm trying to do a bit on that, by the way.
Oh, really?
Because it makes him sound smart, but I'm like, dude, just fucking play checkers. Yeah. Like, we're playing checkers. God.
Yeah, like,
why would you even get those pieces?
Yeah, exactly. Like, don't you know the game? Like, how dare you?
I'm smarter than you.
I won't use your little flat pieces. I got better pieces. They're 3D. It's like, dude, that's not how this works.
It's like saying, everyone's playing basketball while I'm playing football. It doesn't sound so smart now, does it?
Exactly. Like, why would you use feet? Like, because I can. You know, it's like, but you can't use hands. I don't need to. It's like, okay. No, but
you are right. He was like, 20 steps ahead of everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the thing for me. And I think that was the difference. That was the tipping point for me when I came back. I'm like, oh, okay. I see what I'm saying, what I'm doing. And I'm in the same, we're on the same board. We're playing on the same board. But I'm not going to come here with just checker pieces and play this game. I'm going to play with chess pieces. Somehow it's going to still work. I could, you know, metaphorically, whatever. And that was the thing. And ever since that was a change. Was there a tipping point in your career or something that changed you or maybe even pulled you back, anything like that, like family or maybe certain people didn't allow you to do certain things?
Not really. You know, from the very beginning, I was already thinking, like, don't try to do too many things about Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when I watched people do The Tonight Show and everything, I'm like, well, they won't know what I'm talking about.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know, like, try to make it as generic as possible.
Yeah.
And a lot of Seinfeld's jokes I thought were just so accessible
to
anyone.
Yeah,
you know?
Anyone, yeah.
And now I'm even more to the point like, all right, get into as many personal observations that people can relate to.
Yeah.
Everyone, you could talk about MTR because everyone can relate to being on the subway.
Train. Yeah, exactly.
You don't have
to
say MTR.
Yeah,
whatever
the, train.
The local thing
is.
Yeah,
it was the handrail thing.
Relationships.
Same thing. Yeah.
But if it's going to be super specific, and this having locals material is great.
Yeah.
But just to know that
the
if you ever
mind,
go
yeah.
anywhere else,
yeah.
You won't do it in New York. You won't do it in wherever you go.
Yeah.
So I was always thinking like, try to get some stuff that you could say that has no Hong Kong reference in it. You know, and try to maybe stuff like I could talk about my mom and my dad and my family everywhere.
Oh, that will love it. Yeah.
You know what I mean? That makes sense anywhere.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good introduction to you as well. That, oh, this guy's cool. I never thought about this kind of combo.
It could be. But when I talked about being Filipino in San Francisco, they were kind of like, it was offensive. They were offended.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but you guys did those things.
Yeah. but over there, a lot of Filipinos over there, right?
There are, but they're not the ones offended. They usually like it the most.
Dude, it's same. It's always the white guy. Yeah. Same, dude. When
the white guys are actually fine. It's their girlfriends.
Oh, the Filipino girlfriends? Are you saying that?
The white
girls. The white girls. Oh, wow. That's weird. She's like, you shouldn't be laughing at those people. It's like, what?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
It's the police.
They
like to control whatever people are. But that just means that I haven't learned how to step around those problems.
I think the same with me. Same deal. Like, I had that issue where I'm like, I'm okay. Like, I even tried Mohammeded. I tried it over there. I was like, I'm gonna go. It was all right.
There you go.
They liked the police calling me Mohammed instead of Mabubani. Yeah. They didn't like the Mohammeded. So the bit is basically, I get stopped by the police, get my ID card checked, and my surname is Mabubani. The police is trying to guess my name here in Hong Kong. Clearly cannot pronounce Mabubani. C's letter M. Best guess is Mohammed. And because in Hong Kong, pronunciation isn't the best strength we have in the city. So the guy's like, Mohammed did, like mm-hmm. past tense. And I think the Mohammed did past tense thing, they're like, why is it did? I don't get it. You know, so they like in Australia, they were just not getting the Muhammad did part. They get the Muhammad
because they do that with everything, every word.
Yeah.
That they know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're probably didding everything.
Strong did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that was the thing. I think. So you have also noticed the same thing where you went there. You're like, this is a bit about me, which I'm okay with, and yet you are not okay with because you're not even me. But you're like, that's not right. We should not be saying. And that was the thing we experienced in 2015 when we did Comedy Zone Asia. A bunch of like 5 or 6 comedians from Asia all over us coming there and doing a showcase show. And every night when we see like majority white audience, we're like, oh man, this is going to be tough. Because they're going to sit there going like, can we laugh? I don't know. This is not right. And I'm like, we are all laughing. We are all okay. Do you see this lineup? Do you see how we're making fun of each other? Yeah. And we're doing the same show together? That's actually means
it's
that
so
okay.
It's so hard because, I mean, this is the challenge. So I accept it. But it's also like funniness is relative, and like people get offended, right? Which it'll happen, and we have to be aware of that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I would never say this in a show, but I always think it. I'm like, you know that we're just trying to make you guys happy, right? Mm-hmm. All we're trying to do is make you guys happy.
Yeah.
So when you get offended,
that's
just because we messed up.
Yeah,
in trying to make you happy.
Yeah.
Like, you sound like such a bitch.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, you did come in here saying, all right, let's give it a chance to see if these guys can make us happy. If they don't, they don't, you know. I mean, there's many ways to look at it. The funny thing is that people will come in with a certain mentality of like, oh, but I'm beneath this. For example, when people curse online and they don't put like F-U-C-K, they put like F*K. F*K, you're like, dude, it's like Louis C.K. saying, "Say don't say the N word." You're making me think the N word now.
You're making
me
say it.
Because I'm not the bad guy.
Take
credit
for your own word.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that was so brilliant because like it's true. Because like you're trying to be better than me, but you're the one instigating the whole idea of this word. It's like, why are you doing that? You know, you're trying to be
that
like,
joke. By the way, that's brilliant.
The best thing is like his joke about that. His joke about like faggot. I'm like, you see, you have to have someone that's strong enough for that belief. Where he's like, look, I'm way past the whole like insulting. I'm not saying, say this and insult anybody or like hurt someone. It's like, dude, can we come back to the basics of let's put aside all the PC and really look at the actual thing?
They're just words.
They're just words, you know?
Yeah.
And sure, they can have a lot of symbolism and everything. But at the end of the day, dude, it is your mind that's creating the symbolism for that word that you just heard. So it's really that kind of you deciding whether or not that's offensive or not.
Yeah, it's like grow up, right?
Grow up. Yeah, like, come on, man.
There has been real travesty in the world. Are you like watching the History Channel being offended by the stuff that Schindler's List? How could that was the real situation. That's why I love talking to. I feel like I could say things to you that I wouldn't say to someone that doesn't do stand up.
Yeah,
and because you will get it.
Yeah,
you get it, and you won't be offended. You're like, what about this? And especially what was it? That's why I like hanging out with comics because you can make what people would think are horrible jokes, but we're just testing them out.
Yeah.
You know?
Getting the initial reaction.
We're not going to be offended. And that's why when we do a show and we hang out after, it's so much fun. But when audience joins us, I hate it so much. And I want to go home.
So there's two types of audience interaction after the show. There's the type where they're genuine fans, just want to hang out, enjoy and everything. They loved it. They had a good time.
They don't want to hang out. They want to try to make us laugh or try to be down.
See, that's the other type. The type where they
don't need it.
Yeah. And that's the one I don't appreciate because I'm like, guys, like, this is our job. Just let it go, Like, we do not need you to entertain us back.
Yeah.
We're not impressed whether you're funny or not.
Yeah, and you won't be.
You won't be.
I promise you won't. Probably 100%.
Yeah.
99%. You won't be funny.
Yeah. Oddly enough, though, like what I do enjoy after comedy shows, hanging out with comedians, is like not even talking about bits and ideas. It's just talking about life.
Yeah.
You know, just like, hey, man, like, you know, what have you been dealing with? You know, what's your tour like? What, you know, what was tonight's show
yeah,
like?
And then I'll mock you relentlessly.
Yeah, about
and you
it.
You won't take it personally.
Yeah, I'll be like,
it's so fun.
Yeah, exactly. Because you know, it's like office banter.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in a good relationship with your colleagues, you're willing to make the office, the TV series, when you make fun of each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah, exactly. You're like, we're at the level. Like, I know this guy's doing that out of the pure fun.
Yeah.
Like, you only roast the ones you love kind of a deal.
It's the
you know?
Best.
Yeah, it's the best over there. All right. Okay. Let's change gears again because, like, we're getting a bit too technical again. This is a problem we always do with this podcast. When we get comedians on, we get into, like, super technical comedian territory. And people are like, well, why am I hearing
listen
about...
Listen, Conan O'Brien needs a friend.
Yeah, exactly.
He keeps it real.
Yeah, exactly. That's much better, man. At least he's funny.
Yeah.
The two of you, two funnies are not funnier. The hell is wrong with this
podcast?
Sounds
like they already have a friend.
Yeah,
they
we don't
need us.
I'm turning this one off.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, again, I want to go back to our career. The comedy world that we're now living in is very different. Now, I'm not saying... Again, I'm not trying to say, like, oh, who's doing this thing successfully, whatever. But it's like the situation you're in, the type of personality, like, would you be the type of comedian who thoroughly enjoys after show meet and greets if you did your solo show? That's one thing.
I would do it because I like the work aspect of it. I wouldn't necessarily enjoy it, but I would try to do it to the... I'd pretend like I'm having a good time.
Yeah, so you're doing it because it's part of the job kind of a deal, right?
Yeah.
You're like, this is the whole package. I got to do the meet and greets and everything.
Yeah.
That's what I found out this time is that I actually thoroughly enjoyed the meet and greets.
That's great.
Because I get to see my audience now be like, oh, these are the people coming. Like, the best part of my show, honestly, is when I finish the show and we do, like, the group photos together with the audience, they turn up the lights of the room, and that's when I get to see the room actually full.
That's cool.
And that dude, like, is such a different level. Like, you see the MTCs, like, I'll be full of people and everything, but you can't really see because it's all dark, right? And then when you turn up the lights, like, whoa. And
wow.
I remember precisely certain nights when I'm like, oh, the numbers are, you know, half full, whatever. And then you turn up the lights, you're like, whoa, wait, hold on a second. The vibe, whoa, this is not what I thought it was going to be. This feels fuller, or at least feels fuller
in that sense,
you know. And ultimately, what I really like is that at the end when the lights are on, that's when the audience gets to see themselves as well. And then that's where the true colors come in.
That's
if you had a good show, they're happy to be in your video or whatever. Like, yeah, man, I'm happy to be over here. I'm glad we had a good time. If you have a bad show, they'll be like, oh, hostage situation.
Yeah.
They're like, I don't
Well, you
wanna...
don't have to worry about that meet and greet.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, yeah, don't worry. We'll be gone.
It's more like buy and fly.
Yeah, exactly. Like exactly. Yeah. So, I don't know, like, over time doing these solo shows overseas especially, it's really made me realize that even here in Hong Kong, yeah, you do a set and you leave. Now, you know me, like, I don't really hang out much after the shows anyway.
Yeah.
Not so much because I'm not a hangout guy, because, like, I'm not a big drinking guy.
Yeah,
I'd rather have food and dessert, snacks, or whatever.
Yeah.
And secondly, like, yeah, my life in Hong Kong is just too busy where I'm like, I got shit to do anyway. But what I do realize is that with festivals, Chris, the one thing you get to enjoy is that, let's say you have a show, right? You're doing a show, and your show is at 8 o'clock. Comedians will probably hang out, let's say, till 6. I got a show at 6:30. You have a show at 7:30. You got a show at 8 o'clock. And then somehow we'll just have a group text. Right, I just started my show. What are you guys watching? And I'll go watch the same show as you.
So cool.
And then afterwards, like, oh, I'm going to go to the festival club, which is basically the after show club where comedians hang out.
Yeah.
And then we'll see each other over there. Yeah, whatever. We'll see each other there, you know. And then after the club, if you're hungry, okay, who wants to go eat some food after this? And then that's where you just talk smack and everything.
So cool.
And I think that's the thing. That's what I appreciate, because, like, you've got comedians who are not just doing a set. They're doing their show. Mm-hmm. And they have to own that show in the sense that when their crowd sucks, they eat it. Have to eat the whole show.
Yeah.
And when the crowd is good, you're like, oh, dude, God, buddy, man, you know. And I think that is such a different thing compared to Hong Kong, where we're doing a set. You do a 10-minute set, whatever. And then you're hanging out after the show. And I'm like, I feel like you haven't earned that hangout yet.
It's not the same.
Yeah, you're just going for a quick workout.
Yeah.
You didn't do a marathon.
Well, how would you feel if you had, like, 4 sets?
A back-to-back over the whole night?
Yeah.
Yeah, then you've done a full proper workout.
Then you feel right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Like, the thing for me is that a lot of times I find, like, you're basically doing, like, a bicep curl and thinking, like, oh, yeah, I did a bicep curl.
Yeah.
Let's all hang out now. I'm like, well, you just did a bicep curl. That really isn't, you know, a real proper workout.
I love the way you mention this, because it's about time on stage, right?
Yeah.
And so I always tell people, like, why it's hard to get better in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
I'm like, max... average comedian, what's the max they could do in Hong Kong? And it's going to include open mics, which aren't ideal.
Unideal,
right?
yeah.
So what's it, 3-4 per week?
Minute.
Max?
Yeah,
that's already a lot, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, if you wanted to get healthy and work out, would you tell someone to work out 3-4 times a week, 5 to 15 minutes per workout session?
At best,
what results you would have.
Yeah, you maintain. You won't exactly grow.
I think you would eat yourself out of the whatever reduction you got, you know? Like
if you
worked out, you should do 30 minutes every day or something like that, right?
But are you able to, like, for me, my whole thing is that I'll go to an open mic and I'll be a bit cheeky and I'm like, hey, at the end of the open mic, can I do another 10? Mm. Can I do another 20? And usually, of course, with my little status, I get a little privilege. I'm like, okay, fine. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to go on the open mic at the end and wait till the end and do an extra 10 just to run that stuff by myself. And then
Same set.
You know, and no, it'll be new stuff that I didn't do in the open mic earlier on. Because the open mic, you get like 5 minutes, right?
Right.
I'm like, there's no way. Because if I'm doing an hour show, I'm not writing 5 minutes and going up there and, okay, that's a week. We come back next week. I'm like, no. Yeah. I need to work 15 minutes per week.
It also depends if the open mic sucked. Like, sometimes it could suck.
They can suck.
It feels
like
such a waste.
Yeah. True. But I don't know. Like, I've built, maybe again, I'm telling you, man, like having the festival deadline, having to do the solo show, you're on your own.
Yeah.
You die up there by yourself, man. Mm-hmm. Like some nights you're like, man, I'm going to be struggling all night long here, you know?
Yeah.
And you do that enough where you go to open mic, you're like, buddy, if this open mic hurts me, I'll be dead when I'm going to do the whole hour by myself. Because don't forget, like, you might have a small crowd. The crowd's not laughing. You're there by yourself. You have no... Oh, by the way, you don't get an opening act. You're self-introducing.
No host.
Cold crowd. No host. No nothing. You go up there and that's it.
That's legit.
You're legit, man. You finish it and you clean up and you pick up and you walk out.
Wow.
So if you're on your own, literally, like, you are the one picking up your camera at the corner of the room and going outside
that's
afterwards.
Cool.
You go in there, like, let's say, of course, you have a manager and all that shit. They'll do it for you. But I'm saying the beginnings, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, I'll give you an example. Okay. So every show would be whatever time of night. 4:30 with my tech check. I'll go into the room, sound, light, everything. And to the point that I'll be like, okay, let's try the sound out. That sounds pretty straightforward, easygoing, no problem. The monitors on the stage, do I want monitors or not? Whatever, all good. Then the lights, okay? Then you have to have showtime lights while you're performing. How much is the wash on your face? As in, how wide is the spotlight? Then what about the backlights? In other words, what I notice over there, like, they will appreciate that your shadow should not be black. Mm-hmm. They'll give you some lights just to light up the shadows so you get a little tint on it so it's not so boring and flat.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, what about the walk-on lighting? Do they flick around? Do they flash? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Then you got the end of show lighting. You got the audience walk-in lighting. All that stuff. You're like, oh, this is pretty cool to have to worry about.
Yeah.
To the point that literally my 1 hour set is like, I will worry about that 5 minutes before the show. Let me get all this shit done. Because once the show's, when people are coming in, I can't do none of this, right?
Yeah.
And then you have all that stuff going. Then it's you self-introduce yourself where you got to get them going. And the cool thing is that you can hear them when they come in.
Uh-huh.
You can hear the vibe already. You're backstage, you're like, oh, people are talking. Yeah. I'm like, all right, tonight's a good show. Yeah. Some nights they're like sitting there like waiting for the show to start. You're like, shit,
damn.
They're cold, dude, you know?
Yeah, like museum.
And then, like museum. And the good thing is that when you do back-to-back, night after night, same hour, dude, by the fourth show, you're solid.
Dude, that's so cool.
That's what I mean, man. And that was what I learned when I did my first solo show. I did like 2015, I did 1 hour show once, whatever. 2016, did 1 hour show. 2017, we were doing back to back, night after night, same set. Okay. Same exact set. So you got 3 nights to kind of refine a little bit here, maybe throw that away, add this one over there. But by the fourth night, that's your set that you do the whole run. And when you do like a tour, dude, like I did Melbourne, 12 shows in Melbourne. By the fourth night, I'm like, all right, this is the set. We've got it down, right? You feel the confidence where you're like, they're not laughing. Okay, wait.
I could only imagine.
Yeah, right?
I could only imagine being confident going into a set like that.
Yeah. You know,
that's so awesome.
Yeah, you know that. And then different cities as well. And you can feel the difference. Like, for example, when I went to Sydney, I did 2 nights, right? I did two shows back to back because we sold pretty well. So I added an extra show. And the first show, you could see people came in. They were a bit reserved. They're like, okay, is this going to be funny? He's speaking Cantonese. Sure, but you know, we'll give him a chance. And just seeing them go from, I wonder if he's funny, into like, huh, he seems to be consistently funny. Mm-hmm. And then like by the end, they're like losing it, man.
Yeah.
They're like, holy, what the hell just happened here,
awesome.
Man? Right? And
awesome.
Then you see people leaving the first show. Okay, so I'll tell you, 8:30 was my, sorry, 7 o'clock was my first show in Sydney. And I'm doing an hour, okay? So by around, 7 o'clock was my first show. So by around 8 o'clock, I'm done. 8:30 is my next show, all right? So 8:45, whatever, right? So you have people coming into the next show. I'm outside taking photos with the first show. And the next show, people are watching people like taking photos happily. Like, oh, shit, this seems like a good show.
Yeah.
And then they're warmed up.
Yeah, they see the previous audience was so happy and they want to meet you.
Yeah, and you people like smiling, taking photos, this and that. Like, oh, that was really fun. They're like, shit, man. My, oh, my God, I'm excited now. And second show is fire. They walked in, they sat down, that's they're so like, cool. Oh, this is going to be a good show. I need whatever they had, man. We're going to get some of that. This is going to be so good. I
feel
can't
like
wait.
With me, the second audience would be like, I wonder what was wrong with that first audience.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Did he pay them? Was that real? Yeah.
No way, man.
They must be actors.
Yeah, right? And that's what I mean. Like, this is the thing on the reaction, I think, is that as comedians, we always doubt. We're like, I don't know, man. They're going to think it's pretentious. What the hell? But it is when I finally gotten over that. Like, for example, I'll print phone boards with like the city's name and like, oh, the show was funny and with a date on it when they take photos to hold on the phone board just for branding reasons, number one, and to remember what show it was because you won't remember after 10 years, yeah. Right? And then just that itself made me kind of go like, this is so pretentious, man. I'm printing my own board saying this guy's funny.
Yeah.
You know?
I love how you think it's pretentious first.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
That's what comics, yeah, that's what comics
like,
think.
Oh, God, I can't believe I'm doing
this.
This
is for lame people, like marketing people to do.
Right? Like, dude, I designed my own poster. I Photoshopped it myself. I took my own photos, man. Like the room you're in right now,
everything.
This is exactly where I was sitting to take my own photos, right? Yeah. With lights and everything, right?
A one-man show.
Oh, one man on,
totally.
Man.
Yeah,
totally on. Right. Yeah. And I loved it. But the thing is, I'm just like, this is so, I can't believe I'm retouching my face. This is painful, dude. You know, because I know every flaw and I'm like, God damn. Yeah. So, but the good thing is that I always remind myself that the audience are here just for a show. That's all they're seeing. They're not noticing the lights. They're not noticing the mic brand. They're not noticing your pacing. They're not noticing your shirt. But somehow, if you don't do it that way, they're going to notice the error. For example, just for an experiment, on, I believe, my fourth night in Melbourne, I decided not to wear my black blazer. Mm-hmm. White t-shirt, that's it. I was like, you know what, let's just try. And that night, I could sense the audience going like, They were not convinced initially because this guy in a t-shirt and pants, like, it's just some guy talking. With a blazer, like, this guy's got authority. Yeah. And I'm like, that's exactly what I was guessing. I was like, I wonder if really this has an impact. I'm like, it straight up has.
Yeah.
Just coming out there like, all right, this looks legit.
Here, I think you'd be fine.
Yeah.
Because everyone knows you, but they don't know you as well.
Correct.
So they know you from the picture, right?
Yeah.
So that's what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah, okay, yeah. Right, and then when you come out with a t-shirt, like, okay, it's this guy. Let's watch the show, right? But here, they're like, oh, this is the legend. This, we've heard him in a newspaper, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. We're here to see him. Like, you're not looking at Dave Chappelle going like, he's wearing a wife beater. The fuck, you know? Like,
I paid
Dave
for a blazer.
Yeah, exactly.
I was promised a blazer. What the hell are this short sleeve bullshit?
Yeah, exactly. Come on, show some respect, man.
Show some respect.
Yeah. So there's none of that. I mean, so that was the thing, man. That's what I mean by whoever is aspiring to be a comedian who's listening to this now or has been to comedy shows, like, I highly recommend if you're able to one day, if you love comedy, you need to go to one of these festivals and just be in the vibe. I went to Edinburgh last year just to watch shows. And I'm like, this is insane. Like,
I went to Edinburgh 2009,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
It was
way back, man. That's way different, man.
It was crazy.
It was crazy. And the best thing is Edinburgh was my first experience of like a hot room with no ventilation.
Yeah.
They have those rooms and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? They're like,
loved it.
Right?
It was so cool. It's such a cool city.
Yeah.
And you're right. You go from one show to one show.
Yeah.
And you could just, you're in a hurry to get to the next thing. Oh, I want to get it.
I got 10 minutes to go. Yeah. It's insane. And your hours just go by.
Yeah. I was there with Paulo Gada. And we were sitting, we got tickets to watch Margaret's show. It's so cool. Oh. You're sitting with Paulo Gada watching Margaret's show.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
It's bizarre. It's so cool, right?
At the same
time. So,
I know. Like, that's my next thing, man. Like, right now, again, this is all comics talking and everything, but like, right now, the post-show hanging out with comics, the Asian comics, that's done. We know each other well enough. We respect each other well enough. Like, you do your show, I'll do my show. We'll see each other later on, right? To the point that it's like, the show is just like, all right, it's just basically a little obstacle between us hanging out. Okay.
I still think people could be, I think people could be better. I think we could raise the bar
a
little bit, even in a solid lineup.
Yeah.
I think like if all of us were to be told to do 5 minutes, for example, would we have the killer five? I don't think so. And now I'm not dissing us because one of the reasons I mentioned that when Nate Bargatze went back to do Saturday Night Live, he'd only been doing hours.
Yeah.
And he said, so he's like, I got to get back into like an 8-10 minute
solid quick
set.
One,
And he's like, it was not great. A couple of them, not great. And he's great.
Yeah.
And he's like, a couple of them weren't great, wasn't used to it. And I feel like with us, because it's so easy to get on stage, that we get a little sloppy sometimes.
Into
the crowd work a little too quick.
Yeah.
Where are you from? No laugh. What do you do? No laugh. And you keep going.
Yeah.
But when you see guys do that in the States or wherever, they get those laughs so fast.
Yeah. They know what to do with that.
There's no downtime
for
those guys.
Yeah. And that's the one thing I tell people is that I always, at least for me, as it, like, just Jerry Seinfeld said the same thing. He's like, I'm not here to see you do crowd work. I'm here to see your set. Like, do your set. I'm here to see you.
I hate watching crowd work.
It's different. I'll put it. I mean, you know, you've seen me before. Like, when I was at Take Out and stuff, I would do a lot of crowd work as well, just because, oh, let's try out this crowd, you know. But as I over time grew, I was like, crowd work is generic for a lot of comedians. Okay, any comedian can do crowd work. And if an audience came to watch crowd work and they watched a previous show where I had crowd work, they come to your show's crowd work, they're like, come on, man. Like, yeah. I saw crowd work. We get it.
Yeah.
It's like me doing Indian bits. You know, like, oh, Indian people, you know, we have it. Like, we saw the previous comedian. He talks about being Indian. We get it.
Yeah, you know? Unless you could do it that takes me to a place. Like, it'll never be like that. I know it's a high bar, but like that Bill Burr show we talked about.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that took me to a place I'll never forget.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It'll never be like that. It's always like, oh, he made some clever pun out of her job. And he related it back to this other group of people who had like an equally awkward job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like a little callback. Okay. Yay, you know. Yeah. Any other comedian could have probably done that anyway. So there's nothing signature to you for doing that.
Yeah.
And hence why it's like, after a while, you're like, ah, you know, I've seen this connection of like, what do you do? Oh, okay. You don't want to be telling. Be more specific. What, you do some like CIA shit? It's like, okay, we
but
get
you
it.
Getting stopped by the police,
yeah,
for example,
that's unique.
I'm already interested.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
already a good topic.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You just say, I'll stop by the police, and I'll be like, huh? Yeah.
Tell me more. Go on. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
then you have all these great lines about it. Like, that's what I want to hear. Like,
yeah.
a bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Know?
And then that's the one that will get people to, again, this brings us to the current world of social media, where you have a lot of comedians who will post videos of them doing crowd work, which, again, is a quick, easy, because basically it's stuff you can throw away easily, put it online, and get the likes and everything, which, again, I'm not saying, oh, this is terrible, this is shit. It's just like, what I've learned over time is that I really took a lot of time to think about myself. I'm like, oh, would I want to put bits like that? Now, I can. But if you notice now, I rarely do any crowd work, mostly because my time on stage is so precious. I'm like, I don't want to waste it asking you what you do. Mm-hmm. I have this idea I'm trying to work on, and I want to make that work. And I'm going to, if I have only 5 minutes, I'm going to practice that idea another 5 minutes, rather than like, you know what? I think I got it down. Let me talk to you. No. I can refine it even a bit more.
Yeah.
So therefore, crowd work is, I've lost the appeal to it. Again.
Really?
Yeah, because, like, I mean, you remember, right? Before I would, remember when way back we were doing shows at Takeout, and like I would do like crowd work and everything in between. And there's always that guy that's be Cantonese and this now,
yeah,
I'm off
yeah.
that. And it was fun. It was really fun because I saw Paulo Gatta do it. And I'm like, whoa, that's so cool,
yeah.
you know, making shit on the spot, wah, 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 right? And it was fun. It was fun.
Yeah.
But as a artist, as a person of doing this craft,
yeah.
I feel it doesn't really, it's like kind of, okay, you're a bodybuilder, okay? You can just randomly lift heavy shit. You'll get buff. Fair. But if you're trying to be a bodybuilder, you need to have targeted training.
Right.
Where you're like, I need to move my arm this specific way to work on the muscle from this angle. Mm. Not I'm pushing forward.
Yeah.
You know? Like doing a push-up, but you're not thinking about just raising up from the floor. No.
Yeah.
I'm putting my hand at this angle because I know that's going to pull this muscle in this way because this muscle bit off from that muscle and I need to work on this particular fiber over here. And I think that's what I've learned over time is that I'm trying to train myself where I'm literally picking that specific machine.
It's I think the bigger picture, I think that's such a much better approach. I remember you being very good at crowd work, but I remember you doing it because we'll be in a weird venue.
Oh, yeah.
And then I remember, like, I'm going to do my set. I don't care. And I just did it, and it was like, all right.
Yeah.
And then you would have, like, 15, but you'd end up doing 30.
Yeah.
Because you're, like, getting everyone into the show. And I'm like, this guy is fucking working, dude.
God damn, man, this guy.
He's sweating.
Yeah.
He's plastered that smile on his face.
Oh.
I know he hates these people, but he's like, oh, it's good. Oh, yeah, you relate back to the guy.
Yeah, together.
And then by the end, you're like getting an applause break. Every time, I knew you'd do it every time, and I was like, damn. But I didn't know that you didn't want to do that.
No, I mean, at that time I did because it was so cool. But I was at that stage in my comedy career. I'm like, I just want to get laughs.
Yeah.
And I tell people now
I'm still at that stage.
Okay, there
teach
you go.
Me how to do it.
Oh, yeah. I'm still trying to get laughs, right?
Yeah, I like Steve Martin. I just get up there and I enjoy the silence.
Yeah. I mean, hey, everyone, each two of their own, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the audience doesn't understand, but it's okay. We get it, you know?
Yeah, the comics laugh, kind of.
Yeah, that we don't. They're not ticket buyers. Who gives a shit about them?
Yeah.
No, okay, yeah. And that's what I mean. I think that's what I've learned over time. And again, maybe people who listen to podcasts will know that how the evolution between me and Muhammad, I'm sure when he comes back after Australia, he will have another angle on the world of comedy, which is why, coming back to what I told you in the beginning, Chris, like, just as a comedian to a comedian who's been in this kind of scene long enough, the one thing that has broken the bottleneck / been the tipping point is to be in the comedy festival and doing it night after night. That
so cool.
is a complete change. It's like, it's one of those things where you can go to the gym 3 times a week, every week for the next 10 years, but to be able to go to the gym every single day, and it's not so much about doing the same, doing the workout. Like, you could actually do the same kind of workouts over time. In other words, if I'd only do 3 bicep curls on Monday and 3 tricep extensions on Tuesday, I could have done 3 bicep curls and 3 tricep extensions on Tuesday, and it's been the same. Mathematically and scientifically, it's exactly the same, right? Mm-hmm. However, to do the bicep curl, tricep curl, this at every day of the week for like the next 3 weeks or 4 weeks, you're building a mental discipline, a mental muscle, where now you can talk to your bicep to a level that you can talk to your tricep while you're talking to the bicep at the same time.
Well, to extend this metaphor even further, imagine you doing that workout, but you're at Gold's Gym in Los Angeles in the 70s. And who are you working out next to? Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. Who are these other guys?
Ronnie Coleman, all those. The guy that did the Hulk.
I forgot that short guy. Joe.
I forget now. But yeah,
those short guy. But
Jay
like,
Cutler. No, but those are that.
You're not there. Working out next to those guys and not like
pushing an extra rep. Oh,
you're what are you? How do I do that? And if you're in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Or if you're in like some comedy city, you're seeing these greats come in.
Oh.
And you're not going to be half-assing it. You're going to be like, shit. I suck.
Dude.
I got to up my game.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, like this is, and I'll tell you this, when your own peers raise the bar, like for example, Jason Leung.
So cool.
Dude, he was doing the full festival run. That's like 20 something shows. Each night, 150 seater. Sold
Damn,
out. All
dude.
Sold out. Just do the math, man. And then he added like, I think four more shows of 500 seats per night.
Damn.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah. He's coming to Hong Kong, 8th of June, 1,000-seater.
Oh, you mean for here? Yeah, I think I saw that.
Sure. But he in Melbourne, he added 4 shows, 500-seat room per show. That's another 2,000 seats he's added.
Wow.
And the thing you can see is the honest hustle and willingness to really go in and really do his thing. Mm. He will take on sets of anything. He's like, I'm going to go there, do a 5-minute set. I don't care. And when you see your own peer doing that, you're like, man, I better be at the level. If I want to call my peer, we better be doing that. And I think that's the one thing I really learned. Hence the while they're playing checkers, I'm playing chess thing. It really clicked in my head where I was like, okay, you know what? I'm not saying who's better or worse. I'm literally playing a different game from everyone. I'm not here to do a 5-minute set and have a drink. I don't care about the drink coupon. I'm here to work on that 5 minutes because that 5 minutes is going to eventually be added up to my 1 hour that I'm going to be taking all over the world to do shows. You know, so that's the whole strategy, not just the quick laughs over here. And when that laugh doesn't come, I'm like, that's okay. I got my workout in. Mm. Coming back to the Jerry Seinfeld thing of like, it's kind of the tonnage thing. Everyone's got the workout in. You got to get the workout in.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, and I think people like you and myself, like we are willing to keep it consistent. The only difference I would say is that maybe because of my this being my full-time thing, I'm able to direct it into an actual performance where I have to take it around the world because I have to do that. It's not like I this other way to pay my bills. Like this is it. I have to make it happen. And I think it's a kind of like a double-edged sword. Where I can either like fall completely, like die in the cave, where I might go overseas, spend all this money. I'm like, man, I'm not selling tickets. I'm losing money over here. Shit, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
Or, hey, man, we've established that.
Next step.
It's the next step.
Yeah.
So coming back to Hong Kong, like if you told me now, can you take that 1 hour show that I did in Australia, come back to Hong Kong? I'm like, dude, I will can confidently tell you that's a solid hour that I can like do heavy here without even having to blink twice.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. That's why I tell all the comedians, I'm like, man, go to the festivals, man. Go do experience it. And then like see what the next step is for yourself. Yeah. Well,
that
Chris,
great,
I mean,
man.
This is crazy. I mean, it's bizarre like just talking to you like after all these years talking comedy.
Yeah.
Because it's different talking to, let's say, someone like yourself who's been the pure since day one versus someone who's like been in the scene like, oh yeah, Hong Kong's like this. I'm like, ah, it's very different over there.
Yeah.
But okay, Chris, how do people get to know your next step in comedy or follow you or whatever?
Oh, like my Instagram?
Instagram, yeah. What is it?
It's Chris Musni. Chris_Musni.
So CHRIS_MUSNI.
Yeah, that's right.
Instagram over there.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, and what about your... if people want to know when you're performing next, will you be posting it over there as well?
Yeah, you'll find it on there because the backstage will post there and everyone else tends to post there, so it'll be on my stories and all that stuff.
Yeah, so if you just follow the Backstage HK, you will probably see the lineup and Chris Musni is one of the regulars over there. If you go to an open mic night, especially, I believe Aftermath is the one I definitely see you the most because that's the one I go to anyway.
Yeah.
So you see at the Aftermath on Tuesday nights. Are you doing the Monday nights as well at Bar 109?
Not really.
Not so much, right? Yeah, me either. What about Carbon Brews? Is still on?
I did that once. I kind of want to wait and see if it'll survive.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah, but you guys should definitely check it out.
Okay, well, either way, Chris_Musney, go on Instagram, go check it out, follow him, and you can see what's happening over here. And who knows, man, maybe this time next year, you know, something will click, some opportunity will happen, and then you'll take your thing, do it, your own solo show over here. And like, honestly, man, I would say the one thing I would tell people who have been in Hong Kong comedy scene long enough to see the scene grow and evolve, it is like you're the pioneers. So it is also kind of your responsibility to say, you know what? I need to have that maybe solo show just under your belt. Just say, I did it.
Right.
And that'll be really cool to just say, I'm like, wow, that'll be such a cool thing to see where like reverse it, where I'm like,
you're right, man. Something, have like a target.
Yeah, you have to. And make that hour. Whether, and honestly, dude, like whether it's like 10 people, 10,000 people, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. The point is having that hour under your belt to say, I have that with me. Whether I ever take it out and use it for anything, it doesn't matter. I have that. And you have that credibility to keep going on with.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, well, for anybody else who still wants to hear a bit more, we have the Patreon episodes. You got patreon.com/hohopod. If you want to support us, it's just $5 a month. You get to listen to some special content, usually better because I speak clearer and slower. Yeah, usually that. But it's always a little special stuff that we discuss. We go to a topic that we like and we dig deep into it and discuss it. I can already predict that this will be still very comedy heavy. For any of you who thought, oh, where's the entertainment? Look, this is what happens is that when two comics get into it, this is the actual technical nitty gritty of the scene that we're in, the things that we're doing. And the best thing you can do really is just go watch comedians, and watching them evolve is just a fun thing. Where like me seeing Chris, whether it was the scandal of before being banned and this and that, which we'll talk about on Patreon, $5 a month, everybody. We can discuss and how it had an influence on the scene, not just your own career as well. But again, Chris, do you know when your next show is? When you're next on?
Saturday.
This Hold on.
That's the 9th, 11th?
Oh, yeah. Okay. 11th? So it's literally this Saturday because this episode is coming out on Monday. And he will be performing on the 11th Saturday night. I believe you should be performing in Backstage.
Yes.
All right. So go check out Backstage HK. Go watch Chris Musi. Go support different comedy. And if you're in Australia, go support other comedians who are flying in because we pay our own bills, man. It's tough. Thank you so much, everyone. And Mohammed, stop touching Annie. She's tired of it. You've been together long enough. It's not love anymore.